Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, and this is The Bottom Line, starring none other than Mitchell B. Spean. Mitch, how are you?
Good morning.
See, I called you Mitchell, and I usually don't.
That's true.
So
it worked. I still responded.
Yes, you did. I'm going to test you with different names. I may call you George. I may call you Sam, just to see if you are wide awake today. But we are, because this is a really important, not only show, but a topic. And we have a very special guest on today that I guarantee this topic will touch your life in some way, shape, or form, guaranteed. You may
absolutely
be... And I think people will relate once we say what this is. But let's say what the bottom line is. I mean, the bottom line is not all about net income, you know, being CPAs. You're a CPA. I'm a CPA. But the bottom line is what is – you could look at from an emotional standpoint, the bottom line. You know,
absolutely. When you're looking at these things, when I think of the bottom line, other than the what everybody else, like you said, the dollars, I'm looking at – what is it? What are the other things that you can, as you've said to me in the past, create value?
Yeah, creating value, whether it's business or not.
Exactly.
So I mean, even in relationships, the emotional cost of that you're having staying with a certain person that maybe you just shouldn't be with, you know, in a relationship, perhaps, you know, with kids, with anything, with employers. You know, what are you giving up to stay there? Could be one way to look at the bottom line. And so you want to get beyond just the emotions. You look, you take inventory, you say, okay, what's the net result if I go, if I stay, if I do this, if I don't do that? It's a decision-making process, too. So The Bottom Line is a great show, not just about finances, although we've had a lot in that regard with businesses, but it also has to do with life in general. And that brings us to our very special guest today, Ron Thomas, divorce attorney. Yes, I knew the listeners would relate to this. Sadly, well, I successfully completed my marriage for a long time, and so has Mitch.
Yes, I have successfully completed my marriage.
So, Ron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. And this is an important topic, and you have a concentration in representing fathers in divorce. It's not exclusively, but it's a good percentage of your business.
That's correct. I would say about 80 to 90% of my clients tend to be fathers in divorce and custody cases.
Now, when that happens, is that intentional? Do you market to fathers because you see the trend? Fathers' rights are moving nearer and closer to fathers' hearts, and it impacts the kids.
Yes,
obviously.
I do a little bit of marketing to target that segment, but over the years I have found more and more fathers are seeking me out because I have done some good work for fathers in the past, and they talk to each other. For example, I represent a lot of firefighters, police officers, and they talk to each other, and the word tends to get out that go see Ron because he'll help you out with this particular situation. I went through it. You need him on your side.
See, I think that's good. And let me ask you, before we get into some of your background and your philosophy, what makes you different, and this is part what makes you different, is there a, like, as a CPA, I'll give you an example. Like, I think few CPAs know real estate tax law. And that was basically my background. So it's sort of a twist, and, you know, there's a certain special legal tax laws that that apply to real estate that may not apply to other things. When you represent just fathers, is it a little different that and you would know a little bit more or a lot more than other attorneys that don't represent fathers?
Yes, because, of course, I educate myself on ways to represent fathers. You would use different techniques representing fathers compared to representing mothers. And also, over the years, having done lots of these cases, you start to learn better ways of presenting the cases to the judge in a way that best supports your father client.
That makes sense. There's questions just firing in my head right now. For example, does it matter? You hear this a lot. Like, if you're a father, some people say, well, maybe get a woman attorney, you know, to counterbalance it. Or if you're a mom, you know, get a guy attorney, whatever. But Do you have a preference who you go against, a woman attorney on the other side versus a male attorney, or does it matter?
It really doesn't matter. I tend to see that there's a pretty equal representation, males and females on the other side, who are representing the mother. I do come across a couple of firms that represent mostly women, and they know me, I know them, and we have our styles, and those can be very interesting battles in court. But for the most part, you see a wide variety of attorneys that are just practicing regular family law, and they don't target a particular market.
So basically, what's more to me, if I went through this, you would be the guy I would want, because if you're a father and you have actually developed your own expertise in a way, or your own way, your own style, by learning not only how the courts view it, not only the law, but the emotional makeup of fathers, you would seem to be the perfect guy for guys.
Yeah, and I've seen what men go through in these cases over the years. And, you know, in my opinion, there is still a bias out there against fathers in court. Now, I can't prove it with numbers, but if...
we've all heard that.
Yeah, though. If you were to go and watch hearings for a couple of days in court, I will bet you that you would come to the same conclusion. You would say, wow, you know, dads get a raw deal in many of these cases. And I think it's changing. I have seen it change over the course of my practice. Judges are much more willing to give fathers a lot more time. The old standard before I started practicing was that dads got every other weekend parenting time. That was pretty much the standard. So they were relegated to the status of every other weekend dads.
Really?
That's,
and no time during the week?
They would get maybe a
Thursday.
A couple of hours for dinner or something like that, but nothing substantial.
Or vacation.
Yeah.
Well, you always get vacation, I suspect.
Right. And then shared holidays, of course. But, but that's changing now. And, in fact, they just passed a law, I believe it was in 2012, that encourages judges to give fathers more time. It doesn't. It is implied that both parents should have significant, meaningful time with the children. So that is helping to change things as well.
Yeah, that to kind of follow up on Dave's original question about dealing with the attorneys, male and female. Do you see a difference as far as the judges are concerned?
I don't think the judges will take that into account, at least as far as I can tell, whether a person has a male or a female attorney. I think what is more important to the judge is the credibility of the attorney. They tend to see the same attorneys over and over again.
Right.
And, they know certain ones maybe exaggerating things a lot or have a certain style that is abrasive to them, and I think that can affect how the judge receives the information.
Makes sense, because they're human beings too,
right.
Even though sometimes we don't feel that way. No, I'm kidding. I didn't say that. This was not Dave Isaac. Whoops. Okay. Now, you mentioned something interesting to me. You said if you sat down and viewed hearings for 3 days or so in a row, you might be able to pick up some things that might be useful. Would that be legal if a radio show went to do an investigative report and sat there? Are these hearings open to the public?
They are open to the public, yes. Unless the judge seals it for some reason, and I'm not sure exactly what the standards are for doing that, but I don't believe something like what you're proposing would be something that would fit in that category. So I don't think you would. Now, I don't know what kind of equipment you would have, but if somebody's just going in there watching and then coming back and reporting what they observed,
that might be okay.
I think that would be fine.
See, that would be interesting to me is I don't know if anyone did an investigative report like that to actual observation. You can ask and interview people, but it'd be sort of hard too, because you'd really have to understand each case too, perhaps. So
yeah. And one thing I wanted to point out, this is changing though, but years ago, I would tell clients that, look, if it's a male client, I generally like to be in front of a female judge because they are much more liberal in their thinking on fathers having more time. That's how it used to be. The older male judges were the ones that were more traditional in their thinking. But that's changing. And in fact, we've had lots of retirements. A lot of judges have quit or retired, and we have a lot of new judges on the bench. So it's going to be interesting to see how these new judges view these issues and how this plays out over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, that, Mitch, you have a question.
Yeah. That, by the way, talking about going in front of a female judge versus male was what I was trying to get initially.
Yes.
With the other question. But
correct.
But the other was very, you know, the insight as far as how they approach it is real good. One of the questions that I had, though, people should be kind of aware of how long this process really takes, you know, because it takes, you know, from the time that I guess they initially come to you or even before that make the decision to get a divorce. There's a time factor.
I think we should hold off on that when we get a little more specific because I think that's I think that's going to be an answer that it depends. You know, I mean, it depends on the case, and but we'll get more specific as we go on. But I do want to. Why don't we take a quick break right now? Right now, you know, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Ron Thomas, a divorce attorney, concentrating in helping men's rights. And we're going to ask you if you have some type of men's groups, for example, or men's blogs that you deal with. That might be interesting. This is The Bottom Line, heard live on and from, I should say, the Regent Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back. And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking, The Bottom Line, starring Mitch Spean, live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, and our special in-studio guest is Ron Thomas, a divorce attorney, pretty much concentrating in men's divorce. And that's intriguing to me. I haven't heard that before. But it doesn't mean, you know, obviously you will accept women as well. And, in fact, it may be an advantage to women, too. Explain what that means.
Yes, I do not limit my practice just to men. I think that hurts my credibility.
Sure.
It hurts the credibility of the cases of clients that I will take in the future. I don't want to do that to them. I want to maintain a balanced perspective on things.
Sure.
And so if I have a female client, I will go all out for her just as I would
Absolutely.
For a male client. That is my duty. That is my obligation. And I have no trouble doing that. But I just see that there's a need out there for fathers to have someone on their side that understands what's going on and how best to package their case to increase the chances that they can achieve what they're looking for, which is usually more time with their children, and also to minimize the financial damage, because men tend to make more and they get raked through the coals in court.
Wow.
It is amazing what happens to men financially. I've seen grown men sit across my desk and cry.
Ooh.
from stuff that had happened before they met with me, and they would just tell me these stories of what happened in their divorce, and they want to try to change things.
Oh, my.
And sometimes it's too late to change things.
Really?
And,
that's tragic.
And some of them get thrown in jail because they can't pay these enormous spousal maintenance awards and child support awards that really were too high, and they should have handled those situations differently, but either they or their attorney didn't know how to properly deal with it, and they got stuck with something, and now it may be too late for them.
And you know, I've heard child support you can get thrown in jail, but spousal maintenance
yes.
you can too.
Oh, yes.
That I didn't know.
Yes, absolutely. Spousal maintenance is one of those areas that is in desperate need of reform. It's wide open. The judge can pretty much order the person to pay whatever he thinks is reasonable. There are very few guidelines in place, and the appellate courts tend to uphold whatever the judge does, unless it's just so far off the charts that it just shocks the conscience. And that standard is very high to meet.
You know, there's a movie, one of my favorite movies. It just came on again. It'll pop up on these premium channels from time to time. back in the 90s, Bye Bye Love. Ever see that?
No.
Just love that. Rob Reiner's in it, and it's really pretty much pro-men, but what they go for. Three divorced guys, all neighbors, but how, you know, they were living nicely, and next thing, all the wives got the houses. They used to have pretty good cars. Now they have these little, you know, 20-year-old cars, and it was an interesting reflection about, even though it's a comedy, the realities of divorce and how it impacts the kids. The kids often blame themselves for it, and that was indicated in the movie. And I thought it was a really good movie. It got 1 star. I give it a 4 star. I don't know why only one, but if
out
you
of
have
how
a chance.
Many?
You've seen it?
I said
Bye-bye.
Out of how many?
Out of four.
Okay,
yeah.
4 out of 4. Okay.
No, it's 1 out of 4. But
no, you gave it a 4.
I gave
out of
it
four.
A 4, yeah. But it was a good movie, you know, and the other one, it was pro-men, was Love Stinks. I don't know if you saw that. It was hysterical, too. Anyway, we do have a movie review show on Saturdays, but I'm getting off topic. But it is related.
But as far as the damage that we were talking about, the financial damage that men often experience in court, there's a way to prevent that, or at least diminish the chances of going through a severe setback like that, and that is making sure that you have a prenuptial agreement before you get married.
Yeah.
It is so important, especially now that with the marriage, the divorce rates so high, the odds are that half the marriages are going to end in divorce.
Yeah.
And so you want to have a document in place that spells out exactly what's going to happen so that you won't have surprises and you won't give the judge the power to do what he or she thinks is reasonable that may to you seem shocking and set you back financially a great deal.
Can you put anything in a prenuptial agreement virtually?
No. You cannot put issues relating to the children. So who's going to get custody, how much parenting time, how much child support. But you can deal with assets, debts, things like that. In fact, sometimes a person will own a business and before marriage, get married, and they're thinking, well, that's my business. I had it before marriage. And that is true. But if they work during the marriage and increase the value through their efforts, that business is valued through their efforts, the spouse now has an interest in the increase.
Yeah.
And so this can be prevented by simply having a prenuptial agreement that says that business belongs to the spouse who owned it prior to marriage, and any increase in it also belongs to that spouse.
Is a prenuptial attackable, though? Is there any times where if it's not written well, for example, or there's other ways to attack a prenuptial?
It is. There are ways to attack it, the ones that are the easiest to attack are the situations where you've got somebody that is being penny wise and dollar foolish. They grab some form off the internet, don't want to use attorneys.
Oh, sure.
They sit down, they sign it. It's 2 pages long. It has tons of holes in it. We can just, you know, poke through it and throw it out in many cases. But if it's done properly, where both sides have representation and it's done according to Arizona law, not some just general document that they found from who knows where,
right,
then the odds are it's going to be upheld in court.
Excellent advice, Mitch.
Yeah. I've also heard that prenups tend to get very emotional.
Well, it's a difficult topic to bring up. You're in love, probably.
And love has a price.
yes. And so you've got to talk about this delicate topic with your fiancé.
Do you give advice about that, when to bring it up? Or
not really.
It's tough,
that's,
I think,
hard. That's more of an emotional or psychological thing. You have to know when to time it so that the person is most receptive to reasonably and rationally discussing.
After
it.
A drinking binge,
maybe,
perhaps?
Maybe.
Just kidding. That would probably.
I would not advise that.
I agree. They could probably attack that on that.
Yes, yes.
But it is. Have you seen, did people ask that advice? I mean, they go, hey, I want a prenuptial, but how do I approach it? Do they ever ask you how to approach their
Once
fiancé?
In a while, but they have to figure it out. And what I would do is explain to them the horrible consequences they can face without one. Say, I'm going to give you a picture of how miserable your life is going to be.
That'll motivate
if you
them.
Go through a divorce and you lose more than half your stuff. Forget about half. You could lose more than half in certain situations. It's not too frequent, but it can happen. And how would you feel? Now, does that should motivate you to find a way, be creative, find a way to bring up this subject. And, you know, if you love each other, your marriage hopefully will last and you'll never need it. But if you do need it, it's there and you'll be protected. You've got to protect yourself, because otherwise you're exposing yourself to so much damage and harm and even possible incarceration, as I was talking about
before.
Yeah,
that's scary.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting. We're talking about prenups. What? Tell me how you would figure when somebody thinks about divorce, it's afterwards. But now they're coming to you before they get married. You know, they're not thinking about divorce attorneys to do prenups.
Right.
So how do you make sure that people are aware that you can help them?
It's very difficult for me to do. The people that come to see me are those that already are aware of the importance of prenuptial agreements. So the big problem out there is that most people don't understand the importance of these agreements. So there needs to be a way of educating the masses out there that this is something that should be done. Now, marriage rates overall are trending down. People are not getting married
oh.
as frequently. This is very prevalent in Europe. In Europe, the marriage rate has been declining for many, many years.
What did they do? Just live together?
They just live together, yeah. I'm not sure. They may have some rules in place for how to divide things that people own jointly in those countries.
Oh.
I'm not really up to speed on their laws. But the fact is that many of them are not getting married, and that trend is happening here, especially among the millennial generation. They're just
wow.
not getting married. They hear these horror stories. A lot of them are children of divorce. They see what happens, and they've seen the financial devastation. They've seen the emotional devastation. Now, the emotional devastation happens regardless,
yeah.
Whether you're married or not. So I think really it's financial devastation that they're concerned about. So the prenuptial agreement is a good way
right.
to prevent a lot of that damage from happening.
Even if you're not married? I mean, can you have an agreement? Because isn't there a common law marriage that...
No, there's not. In this state, there is no common law marriage.
There's not.
Arizona will recognize a common law marriage that was validly formed in a different state. So in some states, if you're married for a certain number of years and you hold yourself out to be husband and wife and other certain conditions apply, you will be considered married. Common law married in that jurisdiction, and if you move here, you retain that status, and you can get divorced. But here, just by being with someone, or even holding yourself out as husband and wife, doesn't mean that it's going to be a common law marriage.
So, prenup's not applicable. But is it still wise to have an agreement of some sort? Or is a substance, just don't commingle funds? Or
yes.
Is that what we're talking
keeping
about?
Keeping things separate.
Okay.
There are cases out there that deal with how to divide joint assets among people that are not married. But generally, yes, if you can put something in writing, that's going to be better than having nothing at all, because it shows the party's intent right from the beginning.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
And I know, I mean, as you say, you know, with marriages going down, this could be more prevalent. But, I mean, even if, you know, you buy a house together, you should have some type of know how to title it, but also some agreement,
right.
what it means, who pays, and whether it's investments. And,
right.
and it's almost like a business transaction.
Right.
And that would make sense.
Right.
That is very cool. So let's talk a little bit about your background. I think people got a real flavor of your knowledge level, which is phenomenal.
You
fit some great topics, and we still have half the show to go. But I'm impressed that you came out of the University of Southern California.
Yeah, I loved it there.
That
it
must
great.
Have been fun
yeah.
as unbelievable,
it
right?
It was. And good weather on top of it.
So. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And of course, I don't know. Back when you, 93 to 96, then you went Southwestern University School of Law
right.
in 96. But did they have good football teams when you were going, the USC?
they weren't that great back then. It wasn't really until the Pete Carroll era that things really took off.
Yeah, so. Or John, or who was it?
John McKay was a little bit before.
Yeah, that was way before. Right. He was phenomenal. Southwest University School of Law, is that that's in California?
That's in L.A., not far from USC.
Excellent.
I lived in the area, so it was very convenient just to go there.
And what was your passion? What did you always know you wanted to be an attorney?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, for the most part I did. For a little while I was considering going to graduate school in psychology. My undergraduate degree is in psychology.
Which is, I think, very useful.
Yes.
In this area.
It is. It helps me to understand where the clients are coming from.
Absolutely.
And probably the other attorneys and judges, too.
Yes, yes.
Very helpful. So, yeah. But at one time, so then when did you decide? You thought, attorneys, in your teen years?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I would say, late teens.
Did anyone influence you, or did anything trigger that?
Yeah, I had an injury. I had a personal injury that took place, and I had a very bad experience with that. Didn't have representation, and the insurance company took advantage of me, and I got really angry. And I decided that, this probably goes on many, many times.
Probably.
And I knew some attorneys. And so with a combination of all these things, it just motivated me. And, my mom used to tell me, one day you're going to be an attorney.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. She would see the way I argued with people and so on. And so she had a big influence on me thinking that that was something I could do.
It was a gift and talent that you have.
Yeah.
Wow.
So those things all shaped my decision.
That is very cool. And did you enjoy going to law school? Was it? I know it was a lot of study.
Yeah.
But did you try to enjoy the journey?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about a lot of different things, and it changed the way that I thought about things. It changes your thinking, the way you analyze things.
How was that?
I remember I think it was my criminal procedure class, or it could have been criminal law. And a female professor, she told us that when you leave law school, you will never think the same again. And I just saw her at an alumni reception earlier this year.
Is that right?
And I told her, I said, I remember when you said that, and you were so right, because it's true. And I thought when you were saying that no, you're not going to change the way I think, but. That whole process did. And I think for the better. I really do.
Well, is it because you see how to solve a problem differently, or you know more about the law?
Both. And it's problem-solving skills. It's creativity. I think you wouldn't think that, but it does help you to creatively try to figure out a way to, you just have to find a way. In many of these cases, you're presented with a mixed bag. There are good points and bad points, and you have to emphasize the good, and you've got to figure out how to best package it to get the best result for your client. And that applies across many areas of life, just knowing how to look at things from a perspective that is positive and creative and solution-based rather than just, we've got a bunch of things that are bad and now we're screwed.
Do you ever use this in everyday life for yourself? Like, for example, I always thought, here I'm maybe debating someone, retailer or something that obviously made a mistake. I was like, God, I wish I was an attorney. I said, hey, I'm an attorney. Is that appropriate? Do you ever do that, saying, hey, that's not quite the law, and, let's settle this now? Is that something that you use to your advantage sometimes?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Explain what you...
Well, it would be like if you're, you have a dispute with a retailer.
Okay.
Yeah, and I always thought, well, I wish I was an attorney now, because I could say, you know, with all due respect...
Yes.
As an attorney, I'm not pulling the attorney card. However,
right,
this is wrong.
Yes, I won't say that I'm an attorney.
Okay,
but
gotcha.
I will try to explain it in a way that gets through to them, and that's something you learn too. Because everybody receives information differently. They think differently, and so you have to figure out how are they thinking. How can I get my point across to them in a way that they're going to understand and not just automatically reject it because it's different from what they're thinking.
Yeah. So that's one of the skill sets
in
law school.
And that's the psychology background, I'm sure, helps immensely.
Yes. That is 18-year career.
Oh, yeah, almost 19 years.
19. Yeah. Thousands of clients. You have such great experience. I mean, that is, to me, that's invaluable. I everyone has to start. But as a CPA for 30 years, I know I don't look that old. Okay, maybe I do. But the point is 30 years, former government tax auditor, 30 years. And I think back and I go, I think truly to be good as a CPA, you got to have 10 good years solid experience.
Yes.
As an attorney coming out of law school, that's difficult, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, when I first started practicing, I was 26 years old. And I remember this story. I remember the situation where I went out to greet my client, and he started chuckling. He said, "You're my attorney?" He said, "You look like Doogie Howser."
That's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but
but not only how you look, and you do look young. However, just the experience, because you learn a lot of book knowledge and going to classes, but in real life. That experience is invaluable.
Yeah, and I got a lot of my experience in my early years because my rates were very low to attract clients. Yeah. It was a win-win situation. They needed representation. I needed experience, and so I got into court again and again and again.
Perfect.
And that helped to hone my litigation skills, and so I just tried to turn that into an advantage. Okay, I don't have the experience, but I've got the passion. I'm willing to, charge bottom level rates to get the cases. So you can have an advocate. I can have experience. It worked out really well.
Well, that is a perfect match. And like you said, the passion, you had the desire, you had the intelligence, you had the education. You really had what it took. You just needed, like anyone that's starting out, you just need a little experience. But you come across as not only extremely calm, which is good, I think that way you have great awareness what's going on around you, how you hear things, how you can change things. You're not emotionally up and down, and so you're not going to miss much. And I think that's a real credit to you. Very few attorneys I've seen have your calm demeanor. I like it.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Let's take a quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with such a great guest, Ron Thomas, a divorce attorney concentrating in representing fathers in divorce. It means, 80-90%, but you still represent females. And by the way, I would recommend females to call you too, because that means you know the psyche of the father on the other side.
Exactly.
That's a good example. Yes. I love that.
And I will use it.
And I don't blame you. You're there to advocate for your client and do the best you can for them. This is Breakthrough Thinking, The Bottom Line. We'll be right back. And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking live from the Regis Suites. This is The Bottom Line, starring being our special in-studio guest, Ron Thomas, a divorce attorney concentrating in representing fathers in divorce. I really like that. Much-needed opportunity there. And, Mitch, you had a great question that we started to ask, and I said we'll sort of save it for this last segment.
All right. Well, what we were talking about before was the process and what to look out for as you go along. So I guess the thing is some spouses are going to be kind of planning for divorce.
Yes.
So can you go into some of what people should be looking for?
Yes. One of the things I will ask a client during a consultation is, how long has your spouse been planning, if the other spouse is the one that wants to divorce? Do you know how long this person has been thinking about divorce? Has the subject come up? Have you guys argued about divorce? Is this something that has been on the back burner for a number of years? And there are people that will try to put it off until the kids are out of the house, or they're arguing, but inertia sets in. They just never actually go through with it. So if you have somebody, one of the spouses, that is highly motivated to get a divorce, and that person is planning for it, sometimes they'll start setting aside money. Sometimes they may be involved in an affair and spending a lot of money on the person they're having the affair with. So we will typically examine the bank statements, other records, credit card statements, and see if there if we can find unexplained withdrawals, unexplained transfers, charges, because people often try to set aside a little nest egg for when they start their new life. Well, that money is community property, and that's something we should cover
that's
too.
Right.
Is what is community property? Because this is a community property state, but that money is something that belong. Half of it belongs to the spouse that's in talking to me, and so we need to uncover that. And if the judge finds that a party concealed assets or took those kinds of steps without the consent of the other party, that can play a big role, especially with attorney's fees. The judge could find that behavior to be unreasonable and make that party pay for my client's attorney's fees, which can, in a case that's a very highly complex, all-out battle, the fees
be
can
lot.
Be very high, yeah.
And, you know, what I'm thinking as you're describing this, Ron, is that, you know, each spouse, one of the spouses is probably taking care of the finances. That's what I see as a CPA. It could be the wife, it could be the husband. But whoever it is, it doesn't matter. But if you're not the one taking care of it because you're busy working or you have, you know, all these activities going on, that's even more cause to get a little bit more involved if you have some doubt, because you're just relying on someone that takes care of the personal bills.
Right.
And maybe those personal bills aren't getting paid. Maybe credit cards are being run up. Maybe
right.
there's cash being siphoned off, right?
Right, exactly.
That could be scary.
Yeah, and many times we can't even get the records from the other side, so we have to subpoena them.
Oh, wow.
We have to go out and get the records, and then we'll see a lot of interesting stuff going on, suspicious things going on that we then follow up on.
Yeah.
So that's something that needs to be investigated if you have that scenario that I just described, where someone's been planning for a divorce for a long time. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going on,
right.
But it can be, especially if it's a very angry relationship, a very contentious relationship, and there's a lot of animosity. There could be a lot of this behavior going on behind the scenes.
You don't want to come home one day or go to the bank and say, nope, your credit cards are all over the limit, and the $200,000 you thought had in savings has been closed.
Yes.
I bet you may have seen stuff like that
yes.
before. That is, I mean, that just creates a whole new level of anger, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard enough, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It becomes that much more emotional, and a lot of times the person just wants to lash out. And what we have to do is focus, maintain our focus, and that's where I have a knack for, okay, this happened, let's figure out how we're going to uncover it, how we're going to present it to the judge, and make sure it gets addressed and make sure that you're made whole so that you're not in this financial devastation for a very long period of time.
And that's why you need an attorney.
Yes.
Because this, I don't think anyone, in my opinion, should try to do it on their own. There's too many. I mean, you got to know the law. You got, and plus, you shouldn't. What do they say about an attorney that represents themselves?
Has
right?
a fool for a client.
Yeah, yeah. And you should never represent yourself.
Right.
I don't think. And
right.
My brother, when he got divorced, he was a divorce attorney at the time. Now he's a trust attorney, but he got an attorney.
Yeah, you will find that attorneys that go through divorces or any sort of legal matter often have an attorney. I can't think of a case where
right.
I've known of an attorney that was going through something and didn't also have an attorney. So
yeah.
that tells you something right there.
No question about it. It just makes total sense. And so we are in a community property state. So
yes.
as part of the process, as you're going through, you have to know what state you're in, but also the assets, and maybe you can make some comments on some myths about that. I know on one of the breaks you talked about you know, even if you have a business, a separate property, bringing it into the marriage, but it's still separate, if one of the spouses works it and causes or creates the increase in equity or value, that spouse may be entitled or could be entitled or would be entitled
right.
to the increase at least.
That is correct.
Regardless, unless you have prenuptial.
Right.
Yeah, so it goes back. See, it's all interconnected, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
It's the whole package.
Right. But, yes, community property is defined as an asset that is acquired during the marriage. So the judge in a divorce case is not going to be concerned about whose name a particular asset is in. The question that the judge will focus on is, when was it acquired? And
gotcha.
And what was the source of funds that was used to acquire the asset? So if it's the income from either spouse during the marriage or some combination, it's going to be presumed to be community property. So let me give you an example. If there's a vehicle that's purchased during the marriage and it's just in the wife's name, not in the husband's name, the wife may believe, well, that's my car. Mm. It's in my name. It's my property. No, that property is community property. And if it has equity, then that the husband is going to have a half interest in that equity.
Gotcha.
So and anything before a marriage that was brought into the marriage is considered to be separate property. But again, in those cases, the other spouse can accumulate a community property interest in that separate property. The most common areas are businesses and houses, real estate.
What happens, though, when the value goes down?
There is a way to deal with negative equity. There's a formula. It's a little bit complex, but there is a way of dealing with that issue. But for the most part, we don't see that very often. Usually, and when that does happen, they just settle it. And one side will say, I'll take it. It's my business or it's my house. I want it. I will keep it. Not, I will assume the debt. So we don't see a lot of fighting over those.
That's a good question, though. I like that question because I guess that can happen. You bring the spouse and everything was going okay, and then all of a sudden,
yes.
Whoa, where's the business? You know,
even the real estate, though, the way values went down.
Well, that's true. A lot of houses, most went down. And I do have a question. If in the prenuptial, if you had a prenuptial sole and separate income, you keep your income separate, thus you buy a car during the marriage, I would suspect it's separate property.
Well, this is what happens in a prenuptial agreement. Most agreements will say that any income earned by that spouse during the marriage is that spouse's separate property. And anything that is acquired with that income is also separate
there
property.
There we go. So it all connects.
So, yes.
This is, you know, these are so... This is invaluable what you're giving the listeners today, because who's going to think of that? I mean, very few will ever think of this stuff, and it's complex enough for anyone anyway, whether you're attorney, CPA. And I mean, as a CPA, I deal with these topics, but I always consult attorneys, always, because I'm not an attorney, and I have to understand, and I have some complexities between California and Arizona with tax returns to people living in separate states. I mean, it can get, you better know the community property laws. You better know if there's a prenup. You better know these things as a CPA too, or else you can have a wrong return.
Right. Even in very simple divorce cases, a lot of people figure they can just do it themselves. And so they'll get some forms off the court's website and just kind of put things together. Even if they don't have a whole lot in the way of assets, they should still meet with an attorney, spend a couple of $100 just have the attorney look it over.
Absolutely.
And make sure that they're not overlooking something or creating problems down the road. And I have seen a number of cases where they try to do it themselves and they spent many thousands and thousands of dollars fighting over something that could have been so easily fixed right before the divorce was finalized. So
that must drive you nuts. Like, are you kidding me? You know, you could have made this simple.
Yeah.
I bet you believe in, hey, let's just make this simple. But no simpler than it has to be.
Yeah.
That's a quote from Einstein, by the way.
Oh, really?
I loved him. Yeah. Now, this is a no-fault state.
Yes.
Explain what that means to the listeners.
It means the judge won't care
if you're cheating.
If the spouse is cheating.
Unless you can prove you're cheating with the judge.
You know, that would be a big problem. But no, the judge will not want to hear any evidence of that or any kind of marital misconduct unless, now, domestic violence may be a little bit different. That gets into a whole separate area. But for the most part, if there's marital misconduct, meaning cheating, just bad behavior, it's not going to affect how the judge divides the assets. I even had a case a long time ago where the wife was cheating with my client's brother.
Ooh.
And they had been married for a long time. I was only in practice for a couple of years. And my client And the most important thing was she tried to kill him. She took a gun out and pointed. They were in this big argument, and
with the husband.
The wife and husband were arguing.
Oh my!
And he was so devastated. He said, "Just go ahead and do it. Just if you want to kill me, kill me." And she took the gun and then she fired it at the ceiling. And he said, "No, just if you're going to do it right. Fire it at me." So
oh my gosh!
She took the gun and put it right up close to his head. And I guess if my understanding is correct, it sort of grazed his
really?
Yeah,
the wife actually went through with it.
And she was entitled to spousal maintenance because he had been the breadwinner. She had never worked.
If she aimed correctly, she wouldn't have been.
Yeah, and so we went to court. He wanted the judge to know about this, and I said, you know.
He's just not going to care even on that?
But I said,
attempted murder?
I said, look, well, you know, if it comes out, it did come out, but the judge shut it down so fast. He said, counselor, I don't want to hear about that. It's not relevant.
Wow.
And she got spousal maintenance, and the brother and she were living off his money.
And he took a gun to his head.
And he was the one that she tried to kill, and she's with his brother. And now, again, prenuptial agreement.
Would have solved the issue.
You could have fixed this problem. You wouldn't have her doing this to you.
That is an amazing story. Could the police have been called for attempted murder, though?
Yeah, that's a whole – yeah.
Do they have to put that in evidence? I mean, then would the judge listen?
It wouldn't
listen?
Matter to
– Oh, she might be in jail, right?
Yeah. I mean, there could be – if she's – yeah, that would affect how much. But I think in that case he didn't call the police. I can't remember. That was so long ago. But
amazing.
But the point is that she – you have an extreme situation like that. And
still no,
he's
they
got
don't
to
care.
Pay her, and if he doesn't pay her, he goes to jail.
Which is so odd, isn't
it?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it.
With adjoining cells?
Yeah. So basically, what you're saying is you better have an attorney to know the law, what state you're in, is it no fault, community property issues, signs of maybe someone doing things that would indicate a divorce might be imminent. You know, money disappearing, maybe increasing credit cards, those type of things. So there's a lot to this, isn't there?
Yes.
And it's very complex. And how does that work? If people wanted to, we only have a few minutes left, wanted just to call you, how's that process work?
They can go to my website, thomaslawoffice.net. They can see my number's right there. They can either email me from our contact form or call the office. And they can come in for a consultation, and we can discuss what's going on in their situation.
And how does a consultation work? Is it something, you know, how much would that cost, for example?
Typically, it's $125, so it's $125.
That's very reasonable, by the way.
Sit down, we can discuss the situation, see if there's something that I can do to help them, and I'll give them a quote, and they can think about it, and when they're ready, they let me know, and we get going.
So when you say a quote, I'm not guessing it's a fixed fee.
No. Yeah. But a quote as far as what I would need for a deposit.
Like a retainer type of deal.
Yes.
And then do you charge like an hourly rate?
Right. So I would charge by the hour to work on the case. And just in some cases are over very quickly.
Yeah.
People can become reasonable very quickly if they see that it makes sense financially. Others, there are reasons why they need to go all the way through. And, you know, those cases can be more expensive. So
It could go on and on until all parties sort of come to their mind because I'm sure certain parties that feel slighted or hurt or something, they could delay it and delay it and delay it.
Oh, there are ways of doing that.
And that can be a fortune, right?
Yes. But the law does allow the judge to make that person who's trying to delay and things, drag things out and cause financial pain to have to pay the other side's attorney's fees.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's happening more and more now. It used to be the exception, but now it's more
common. Wow. So contact information again, your website?
It's thomaslawoffice.net.
thomaslawoffice.net.
Correct.
Do you want to give a phone number or just?
Yeah, 602-788-1395.
So 602-788-1395. I'll tell you, this is invaluable. I always said as a CPA, and I'm going to stick to this, is that you should, even if you don't need an attorney, you should know an attorney. Just say hello one day. You know, whether it's in business, a divorce attorney, it doesn't matter. I think that you time to establish a relationship before something happens.
Yes.
No doubt in my mind about that. And you're not, you know, it's just good practice in life, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's great. Ron Thomas, thank you so much. Well, this has been enlightening.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. Really appreciate you. And Mitch, thank you. The Bottom Line, we'll have another episode of The Bottom Line next month. And this is Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network.
Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side.